Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to Think Again, a program produced and presented by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for 28 years, and sorry for the interruption before, I was just messing around with the panel here. We're broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the not ceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'm Jacques Boulet today. Jennifer will not be with us, so I'm talking with Robert Hoskin about his involvement in several community development projects in the Kimberley with Aboriginal communities and since a few years now in West Papua. Welcome to Think Again, Robert.
Oh, thanks, Jacques. It's so good to be present and to be speaking to people across Australia.
So we try, as listeners will know, to mix up our Think Again program a little bit by inviting and having conversations with people involved in interesting projects, projects that are aligned with the Borderlands philosophy and with our practice approaches, including particularly a strong commitment to community development and people's participation in decisions that matter to them. And that applies especially to working with peoples and groups that have been way too often and for too many years excluded from decision-making in too many areas of their daily lives. And that certainly applies to the groups Robert Hoskin, our guest today, has been involved with. So let's get going right away, Robert. Tell us a bit about your background and how you came to get involved in the Kimberleys and particularly then also West Papuan projects. As I understand it, you became involved in the West Australian Uniting Church project, attempting to support the Aboriginal community of Mwanjum.
Well, that's right. How do I summarise a long, long journey? I'm a minister of the Uniting Church, retired, and some 30 years ago, an Aboriginal elder from the Kimberley, from the Mwanjum community near Derby, his name was David Maljali, visited Melbourne. By strange circumstances, and I won't go into it, I felt I was led to relate to his community. And so a journey started, took me a few years. A journey started in 2002, and I wandered into the community, was accepted as a visitor, and helped them with their annual festival, the Mwanjum Festival, and did that for a number of years. They were an extraordinary people in terms that they took me up country. They took me to their various parts of the country, which were critical to them in terms of relationship to land, to culture, and to law. And they educated me. They educated this white fella in their land and the fact that they'd been there for 55,000 years made an extraordinary difference. So I went on this journey, and out of this journey came a PhD, trying to work with what does it mean to collaborate or work with an Aboriginal people and community as we went up country. They did the advising and they taught me, and I tried to put this down into an academic framework. And a couple of years later, I did a story with an Aboriginal elder from the Narinyan tribe. His name was Eddie Bear, and it was a story about him going back to Majidan, his homeland, and connecting with those homelands and what it meant to him.
And for listeners who are interested, we have available that book still in quite a number of, copies. So having spent about 20 years supporting the Mwanjin community, especially in their cultural celebrations, and having published these books, and then finalizing a doctoral thesis about these experiences, where did the switch to West Papua come from, and what was the situation that that project intended to respond to?
Well, I met these people from Western Australia, as you said, from the Florida Uniting Church, and they were looking for ways to mission, and their ways of mission were both in the Kimberley and in West Papua.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I travelled with them extensively in the Kimberley, in particular a friend, Ross Gobby.
Mm-hmm.
And travelling with them in the Kimberley, I said to Ross one day, I'd love to come and see what you're doing in West Papua. So in 2020, I went to West Papua with Ross and did a whirlwind tour of many of the educational centres that had been set up in West Papua. I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, but it was an extraordinary opener. I said to Ross, look, Ross, there's no way I want to get in a relationship with the people. I've done that in the Kimberley. It's been extraordinary, but it's also cost me. But it didn't work out that way. I got as close to the people of West Papua as I did to the people of Mwanjin.
Mm. So tell us a bit about the situation in West Papua. It's a former Dutch colony that became a province of Indonesia. And as Australia has been part of the process of decolonization in the region, and not always innocently, we remember East Timor and where that then eventually led to. So very briefly, what happened historically and what did it translate to in terms of the development status of Indonesia's Papua province?
I think the sadness I face and feel is that way back when the Dutch were ousted from West Papua, and I guess that was appropriate given they were colonists, they tried to set up independence within West Papua.
Mm-hmm.
We, with the United States, went to the UN and said, look, that's not on. These people need to be part of Indonesia. And mm-hmm. so we supported Indonesia. That's had dramatic consequences. It's had the fact that an equal number of Javanese have transmigrated mm-hmm. to Papua.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant that there's been a huge difference between West Papua and Papua New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
When I travel to West Papua, as I have a number of times, my friends say, look, oh, you're going to Papua New Guinea. And I have to say to them, no, look, I'm not going to Papua New Guinea. I'm going to West Papua. I don't think it's really in many Australians' minds, A, that we took that approach with the UN, but also that our closest neighbour is West Papua, which is quite distinct mm-hmm. from Papua New Guinea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in a nutshell, I think we've got work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, it's not the work of supporting independence. It's the work of supporting the people to be economically independent. That is, to be able to find their way economically through jobs and security to be part of the Indonesian people in a very creative way.
Mm.
I'll say that again.
Mm.
It's not so much independence, but it's economic development.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Which may be a little bit of a controversial position, but I think at the same time it is a number of West Papuan people who have been making that decision as well, whilst also there is resistance to that. Mm. To have that sink
well,
in.
Well, I mean, for me, it's meeting up with Fred Bunda.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yep.
Fred is an extraordinary person. You've met him.
Yep.
He spoke at a sustaining communities conference.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred told the story of his family,
mm-hmm.
His wife's grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife's grandfather really set out to be independent,
mm-hmm.
but found that was not the way. And the side of the creative way was to find an economic sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so he set up a community that has done that. It's both economically sustainable, but also its focus is on education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the impact of that is that Fred is now continuing that tradition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so to let that settle a little bit with our listeners and with ourselves and for us to catch our breath a little bit, let's have a bit of a music break and listen to my favorite, Archie Roach with Cannot Buy My Soul.
For 200 years we've been beaten down, too long on the door. My dignity I'm losing here, mentally I'm on. There's a system here that nails us, and we're left out in the cold. Oh, they took our life and liberty, friends, but they could not buy our soul. Joe Hill died, Che Guevara fought, Pamela Woy lay down dead. If a person speaks out critically here, they could get loaded down with lead. How long can the majority wait for their story to unfold? Oh, they took their life and liberty, friends, but they could not buy their soul. But the clever man spoke precisely, humanity, he said, was done. The greed for greed could not proceed if our struggles to be won. For humanity is more important here than a constant quest for gold. Ah, you may take life and liberty, friends, but you cannot buy our soul. One morning, rode a donkey up through that gate. He could see quite clearly he was going to meet his fate. And the powers that be could see that he could not be born or sold. Ah, they took his life and lived their friends, but they could not buy his soul. Yeah, they took his life and lived their friends.
You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Radio, 855 AM on your dial, and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Today we're having a conversation, or I am having a conversation with Robert Hoskin, member of the Borderlands Cooperative, and also very much involved in several of our past projects, including the Oasis Graduate School and other initiatives. And he has collaborated with the Aboriginal Muwanjum community in the Kimberley, and now has been involved with an educational project in an international development context in West Papua, or Indonesia's Papua province. Robert, the project you are supporting and are active in is situated in the overlap between Papua's educational system and their employment, or more broadly, their economic system. And it intends to, as you start to explain a little bit, it intends to indirectly create employment opportunities for young Papuans by teaching them English. Could you elaborate a bit on this?
Yeah, sure. When the people from Floreat went to West Papua, they of course asked the question, well, what can we do? And they were led for many years into issues of health, water and timber. But by 2017, the resounding answer was, teach us English. And the reason for that answer was English gave Papuans the opportunity both for jobs, tourist industry, the mining industry, but also the possibility for scholarships to bring people out to Australia and other countries to do higher level scholarships, masters and doctorates, and then go back and teach the people. So English has become a very important stepping stone for economic success or development. But of recent years, what's coming more into the fore is not only English, but education and business, computing skills, and general life skills. Now, this has come because for a number of years, the Floreat people raised over $1 million for the work. Quite expensive to undertake projects in third world countries, and it took money. And what's happening now is the local people are getting the money. And so just late last year, they got 400,000 plus from the local government for English classes in the Highlands, and they got 100,000 plus to build a centre. Now that means that the local government is coming on board with the vision of the people. And as they come on board, so these other possibilities become very viable, namely economic development through computer and through business. Now, does that mean that we run away? I think that there's a history of organisations carrying out projects and then getting the hell out of there. That's not our intention. It was not our intention in the Kimberley. I was there for 25 years. And the Black Pearl Network were there since 2008. And they'll certainly be in West Papua for a number of years longer, not necessarily to raise a lot of money, but to help with the business and computer and other expertise that the people need. It's a collaboration, a two-way event, and a relationship, not a one-way event.
Yeah, so you probably will later say a little bit more about that, and we're slowly moving towards the end of our conversation. So could we together reflect a little bit on the underlying values and prospects of the Papuan project, particularly as a community development approach? What stands out for you as a central set of values for that project, and probably also throw in a little bit of the history? Because there's an interesting bit of history around how education and a particular form of colonial education via the Dutch still, and which basically is also a tradition which is being maintained by Fred and his father-in-law, I think. So could you just tell us a little bit of that story as well?
Yeah, look, as I said, Fred's father or grandfather-in-law set up the community. And the key to it, I think, you ask for a principle, is relationship. That all this work has come out of key relationships between people. The relationship between Fred and Ross and others. The relationship between Fred across Papua, the many people he knows. And so I think at times, we think in terms of project development and charts and whatever, but I think it really boils down to how well we know people and who do we relate to and what is the basis of our relationship. So I put that as a key. And the second key for me would be holistic development, or in your terms, and I've heard it from you, community evolvement. I like it. That something evolves, but it evolves in a holistic way, so that we have our eye not on a single project, but on a whole range of issues, including justice, that feed into the life and the evolvement of a community. And finally, I think a key thing is long-term strategy and development, or evolvement. It's a process, a long-term vision. When Fred and I spoke at the conference, we were keen to tell the story of his grandfather, because the vision started many, many years ago, and it evolved over time, and it strengthened out of the relationships that emerge out of time. So I put those three things to you, that it's one of relationship, it's one of evolvement into a holistic project, and it's an evolvement that happens over time.
So, just finally, because as I said, there's just a couple of minutes left. What are all your personal learnings of those last 25 years? Because I know that could probably take a whole program of 30 minutes. What is it that you really take out of that, in terms of also gratitude to the people you have learned it from?
Look, I've been so privileged. I'm 78 years of age. And I feel my life is expanding rather than contracting. And it's expanding by being in relationship with the First Nations people within Australia and the people from Papua. Now, that's been extraordinary for me, and such a privilege. And it's not a thing of the past. It's very much happening in the present.
Mm-hmm.
In a couple of weeks' time, I have a very close person coming to do her Master's of Education at Monash University.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been talking with her for 5 years.
Mm.
And so it's a great privilege to see her get a scholarship and come to Australia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How wonderful life is.
Mm. And just compared with the kinds of things we as a country and as communities here in Australia may want to learn from, what it is that those peoples in those places we usually consider underdeveloped or backward or something like that, what is it that we can learn from those experiences with them?
Well, I think there's a risk of us thinking all the time of going forward.
Mm. Mm.
We also need to link back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a spiritual matter too. And I would love to have a chance to talk spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, spiritual is coming in terms with the land and the story of the land and the story of the people of the land and linking it in to the present.
Yeah, I think we certainly could do with a little bit of that, since we are quite destructive of the land we inhabit and have been taken away from them, at least in Australia, but also the colonial experiences of Papua were pretty much similar. Take whatever you think you need, run away as fast as you can, make a lot of money out of it, and leave the debris behind you.
Still happening big time.
Yeah, it certainly is. Thank you, Robert, for this conversation. And again, my apologies for starting it with a little bit of a technical hiccup. We probably will continue to invite other people like that, dear listeners, to just share with us experiences which often come out of very small decisions that you just want to do something than the kind of normal things which are expected from us. Also saying that volunteering, that means voluntary involvement in things like what Robert just has been talking about, remain important. Even if probably that type of volunteering is not really that much supported anymore by as it used to be, let's say, 30 years ago. So in that regard, thank you for actually helping us remember what is possible, Robert, and good luck to you and to Fred and to everyone else you will be encountering in the continuation of the project. So, and to our listeners, thanks for listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, you can email Borderlands, borders@borderlands.org.au. And remember, our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And as per usual, please enjoy Milky Mala by King Stingray.
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.